The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, welcome to a Wednesday, everyone. New day, same as the old day. It's just the insanity continues. And here we go. Last night, I don't know if you happened to see it, but Donald Trump was on ABC television. He emerged from his Fox Not News bubble to participate in a town hall on ABC last night. And, you know, I've asked, who could possibly still be uncommitted at this point? Well, that was the criteria that ABC used for questioners, for people to be in the audience. And make no mistake, it was a very small crowd. They were obviously in a TV studio, socially distancing the few people that were allowed in, who were all wearing masks. And the, what I learned is, I guess undecideds include, you know, people who did not vote in 2016 because they didn't like either candidate. One guy who was identified as a Jill Stein voter in 2016. So there are people who, I guess, are technically uncommitted. Doesn't mean they're undecided, is what I gleaned from all this. And the people who asked the questions last night, and I didn't watch the whole thing, to be honest with you, because that's what I do. I watched clips this morning and was, you know, as disgusted as one could be. But I did notice that the reasons these people were uncommitted were not because they couldn't decide between Biden and Trump. It was more like, really, I got to choose between these two? So we'll get into some of the questions from last night. It just proved, you know, when Donald Trump says he's not doing any formal debate prep, because he does prep all the time in his job. Oh, please. It's like a comedy of errors. But he did. So he participated in this thing last night, and it was just awful. It was really bad, to the point where I guess Fox was calling it an ambush. Seriously, they were insinuating that it was all a setup by ABC. The problem is that Donald Trump doesn't do homework. He doesn't read. He doesn't pay attention. He doesn't listen to his advisors. He doesn't do the work involved with the job. I mean, and that was apparent the other day when he rattled off 8 hours of Fox television programming that he, in an offhanded way, just mentioned, I watched all these shows last night, so obviously I'm well informed. No, you are the subject, the victim of propaganda, of state-run television. And I know it's not the state, but it's, you know, Trump sympathizers, which is apparently the same thing. But to give you an idea of one of the questions and answers, let me see which one. Okay, here's a good one. This one, you know, is a typical, here's one of the questions from last night.
Right here, she's from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and you actually haven't voted before. How are you?
Oh, this is somebody who never voted before.
My question is, if you believe it's the president's responsibility to protect America, why would you downplay a pandemic that is known to disproportionately harm low-income families and minority communities?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I didn't downplay it.
No.
Actually, in many ways, I upplayed it in terms of action.
What?
My action was very strong.
Yourself,
yeah, because what I did was with China, I put a ban on. With Europe, I put a ban on. and we would have lost thousands of more people had I not put the ban on. So that was called action, not with the mouth, but in actual fact. We did a very, very good job when we put that ban on. Whether you call it talent or luck,
oh my God,
it was very important. So we saved a lot of lives when we did that.
Oh,
there were holes in the ban, and the European ban didn't come for another month.
Well, they were Americans. I mean, the holes in were if you have somebody in China that's an American citizen, we had to let them in. I mean, they were.
Yeah, but that means there wasn't a ban, and so it wasn't effective. The thing that he is glomming onto to explain why he was so in control and did such a great job is we have a China ban. Well, no, because hundreds of thousands of people were still allowed in from China. I get that many of them are American citizens. It was another fuck up of Trump's administration. But the fact that he says to this woman, I didn't downplay it. Let's rewind the tape, shall we? And go back to one of the tapes from Bob Woodward.
To be honest with you.
Sure, I want you to.
I wanted to always play it down. I still like playing it down.
Yes,
because I don't want to create a panic.
Ah, so he always wanted to play it down because he didn't want to create a panic. And then he said this.
Well, I didn't downplay it. I actually, in many ways, I upplayed it in terms of action.
There's no such word. Upplay is not a word. Downplay is a word, but there's no such word as upplay. My God, the man is just a walking, talking moron. But that gives you an idea of why I'm glad I didn't watch the thing last night. All right, we'll get into a little more of it in the news. I guess we should start with something funny, because we can. So I happened upon a new, well, not new, new to me, I suppose, a couple who, you know, during the pandemic, during the stay-at-home time, and yes, most of us, at least those of us of a certain age, are still staying at home, are still isolating, are still being careful. And when we do rarely venture out, we wear a mask and often gloves and a face shield because we don't want to get sick and die, at least not yet. So anyway, this couple, they call themselves a man-woman camera parody, or the product of their work are a man-woman camera parody. So here's one of, it's not a new one. It's actually, they did this one a month or so ago, but I'm just now finding them and discovering all their brilliant projects. So here we go. A man-woman camera parody.
At first there was a plague, I was petrified. Kept thinking we would never be allowed to go outside. But then the restaurants and bars started opening their doors, and there were scores of feckless people on our shores. And now it's back in our airspace. Just because some liners didn't want to cover up their face. You should have worn that stupid mask. You should have stayed inside your yard. If I had known for just one second, you would all let down your guard. Go on now, go. Please go back in. Just turn around now and put some Purell on your skin. Don't care if you miss haircuts or your priest or your rabbi. Just because you need Pringles, you think that all of us should die.
Oh, and now we see the male half of the couple dancing on roller skates wearing a McGovern 72 jersey. I like these people. All right.
I'll be
Oh, and there's the hubby dancing on the roller skates again. While she jumps on the trampoline, I guess they will survive. A man, woman, camera parody. There you go. Something funny to get your comedic juices flowing, because, boy, we could really use it. I don't know about you. There's not a whole lot I find funny right now. I find things funny peculiar, but not really funny. Ha-ha. But that was good. I like this couple. They're talented. All right. Shall we get to some of the news? Because it's more and more disconcerting every day. All right. Let's do it. Hit it. Well, the breaking news from today is that Michael Caputo, that nut job, top communications official at the Department of Health and Human Services, is now taking a 60-day medical leave. And his top aide, a man named Paul Alexander, will leave Health and Human Services entirely. The move comes 3 days after Caputo urged Donald Trump's supporters to prepare for armed conflict after the election, and accused government scientists of sedition. Because Donald Trump only hires the best people. The best. And he's not even leaving. He's taking a medical leave of absence for 60 days. So what, he comes back after the election? Well, hopefully, you know, that won't happen. All right, now on to the big news story that broke. Actually, I had it at the end of the show on Monday. We talked at length about it yesterday, and it is absolutely stunning. A former nurse at the Irwin County Detention Center in Ocilla, Georgia, came forward to alert the public about an excessive number of hysterectomies being performed on immigrant women at that shelter. The Government Accountability Project and Project South, which are two activist groups, filed a whistleblower complaint with the Department of Human Services Office of the Inspector General on Monday on behalf of Dawn Wooten. She's a licensed practical nurse with over a decade of experience who spoke out publicly yesterday for the first time about what she witnessed.
The ladies would put in to see the gynecologist for whatever reason that they were wanting to be seen for, and they were having hysterectomies. They would come back oftentimes and question, why did I have to have a hysterectomy? I didn't know I was undergoing this. I had one lady to tell me that she was a young girl. If she had known that she was going to have a hysterectomy, she wouldn't have went. I had a detainee to ask me. She said, well, what is he doing, Ms. Wooten, collecting all of our uteruses? And I just looked at her puzzled because I didn't have an answer.
She didn't have an answer. So she has dubbed this doctor the uterus collector. And this doctor has now been identified as Dr. Mahendra Amin of Douglas, Georgia. As of this morning, he was still showing up on Google. Google reviews were fairly okay for him. I did try calling his office. To my surprise, they answered. It was business as usual. And when I asked, is the doctor still seeing patients? Is he taking new patients? I was met with silence. I said, has he been arrested yet? And they hung up on me. So, you know, Dr. Mahendra Amin of Douglas, Georgia, in case you were wondering, I'm waiting for charges to be filed. In other news, Hurricane Sally made landfall this morning near Gulf Shores, Alabama, as a Category 2 storm. Problem is, it's moving very slowly, bringing with it the potential of, quoting the National Hurricane Center, extreme life-threatening flash flooding. Sally could dump up to 30 inches of rain in some areas and hit parts of the Gulf Coast with storm surge as high as 7 feet. And again, this reminds me of Harvey. Remember how Harvey's just sort of parked on top of Houston and sat there for 2 days? That looks like what Sally is doing. And if I could play music on this program without being copyright violated, I would hit Ride Sally Ride right now, just because I could, if I could. In Louisville, Kentucky, the mayor announced yesterday that his city has agreed to pay $12 million to the family of Breonna Taylor. She, of course, the 26-year-old EMT who was fatally shot by police when they entered her home, executing a no-knock raid. Taylor's boyfriend, who was sleeping with her at the time, who was legally armed, thought criminals were breaking in, and he fired a shot, hit one of the officers. They responded with a heavy barrage of gunfire, hitting Taylor 5 times and killing her. So this $12 million settlement is the largest for police misconduct in Louisville's history. And allegedly, it will not affect the ongoing investigation into the case. All I know is that 6 months later, not a single one of these cops has been charged with her death. I hope that changes soon. So, as I mentioned at the beginning, Donald Trump emerged last night from his Fox Not News bubble to participate in a town hall on ABC. It was moderated by George Stephanopoulos, and questions were delivered by people who qualified as uncommitted voters. The first question was from Paul Tubiana of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Mr. President, I voted for you in 2016. I'm conservative, pro-life, and diabetic. I've had to dodge people who don't care about social distancing and wearing face masks. I thought you were doing a good job with the pandemic response until about May 1st.
Well, that's wrong.
Then you took your foot off the gas pedal. Why did you throw vulnerable people like me under the bus?
Good question.
Well, we really didn't, Paul.
We've worked very hard on the pandemic.
We've worked very hard. It came off from China. They should have never let it happen.
China.
And if you look at what we've done with ventilators and now, frankly, with vaccines, we're very close to having a vaccine.
Okay, shut up. That's about all I can take of him. Actually, later on, so I get a lot of newsletters sent to me overnight. So when I wake up in the morning, I read everything. And Brian Stelter over at CNN did something where he tried to track down all the questioners at last night's town hall. He was able to find and contact 3 of them just via the regular old Google machine and email. One of the people who got back to him, only 3 of them did, was that first questioner, Paul Tubiana of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And what Stelter wrote is, quote, "He didn't answer anything," Tubiana told me afterward. "He was lying through his teeth." That was a quote from the guy who asked the first question. Stelter writes, "Tubiana is like so many people. As the pandemic raged," quote, "I was feeling scared, alone, and powerless," he said. He said, quote, "There were failures of government on both sides of the aisle last winter and spring, but he felt like Trump stopped providing leadership as the crisis continued from spring to summer." He said he thought Trump stuck to, quote, "canned responses" at the town hall. Another person who asked a question was Pastor Carl Day. This was really interesting. So this is a black pastor, I want to say, from Philadelphia. Here was his question, and oh my, it made so much sense, but you could tell that Donald Trump had no clue what he was talking about. He clearly didn't understand the question, or didn't want to understand the question.
You've coined the phrase "Make America Great Again."
He didn't coin it, by the way.
When has America been great for African Americans in the ghetto of America? Are you aware of how tone deaf that comes off to African American community?
Yeah.
Well, I can say this. We have tremendous African-American support. You've probably seen it in the polls. We're doing extremely well with African-American, Hispanic-American levels that you've rarely seen a Republican have.
I'm going to cut him off because he didn't answer the question at all. He was asked, when you use this slogan, "Make America Great Again," when was it ever great for African Americans? And Trump starts saying, "Oh, we do great. America, African Americans love us." Well, Stelter reached out to him after the event last night aired, and here's what he wrote about that one. Quote, "Trump talked about the pre-COVID economy and cited, quote, tremendous African-American support. Day," that's this man's name, Carl Day, "pressed him for historical context. When was America great?" Trump still didn't answer. Day told me, quote, "I don't feel like he adequately answered it, but essentially in doing so, he actually did. America was never great for black Americans in the ghetto." Stelter mentioned the third person that he was able to get a hold of who asked a question at the town hall last night. It was a woman whose name is Alicia Black. She's an English professor at Kutztown University, and she brought up health care. And Stelter writes, Black was born with sarcoidosis and said she'll die without the medication covered by her expensive insurance plan. Black asked what he's doing to protect people like her, and he dodged. Black said, quote, he didn't answer my question. She said she left the event fuming, but resolved to do something about it. Going into the town hall, she said she was, quote, on the fence about even voting at all in 2020. That's why she qualified as an uncommitted voter by ABC standards. But now she said, quote, I'm going to vote for Biden. Trump reanimated me to vote. So there you go. And by the way, Trump also had the gall to blame Joe Biden for not instituting a national mask mandate during the pandemic. Biden has, in fact, urged all state governors to mandate mask wearing to slow the spread of the virus. And unlike Trump, Joe Biden has no authority to mandate anything. But the part that got the internet's buzzing was when Trump attempted to explain his dishonesty to the American people about the severity of the virus.
I'm not looking to be dishonest. I don't want people to panic, and we are going to be okay. We're going to be okay, and it is going away, and it's probably going to go away now a lot faster because of the vaccine. It would go away without the vaccine, George, but it's going to go away a lot faster.
It would go away without the vaccine?
Sure. What? Over a period of time. Sure, with time. It goes
many
away.
Deaths.
And you'll develop herd, like a herd mentality.
It's going to be herd developed,
and that's going to happen. That will all happen. But with the vaccine, I think it will go away very quickly.
Got to take a quick
but
break.
But I really believe we're rounding the corner, and I believe that's strong.
As you know, Dr. Fauci disagrees with that.
Well, I mean, but a lot of people do agree with me. You look at Scott Atlas. Some of the other doctors.
Okay, so let me cut him off there. First of all, he's dismissing Dr. Fauci's disagreement with him, but quoting, you know, relying on Scott Atlas, who is not a infectious disease specialist. He's a radiologist. He reads x-rays. Seriously. And he's the one who's pushing this herd immunity, not herd mentality. But Donald Trump keeps talking about herd mentality. The man is fucking nuts. Just in case you didn't already know that. And by the way, Joe Biden gets his turn in a similar town hall setting this Thursday night at a CNN event in Pennsylvania. All right, before we move over and finish up with the news and talk to our friend Thomas Neuberger, just a couple more things. There might be a little bit of bipartisan comedy on the horizon, not having anything to do with a coronavirus relief package or anything like that, but having to do with the census, believe it or not. HuffPost is reporting that senators unveiled bipartisan legislation to give the Census Bureau more time to finish the 2020 census. It's an 11th hour effort to prevent a potentially severe undercount of the U.S. population. The census count conducted every 10 years was delayed for months due to COVID. Now the Trump administration is insisting on ending it a month early on September 30th so they can meet their end of year deadlines. Are you kidding me? Because this new crunch schedule all but ensures that hard to reach areas, which are typically Native American, rural, poor, minority communities, will be even harder to reach if they are reached at all. We'll see if anything comes of this. What else? Oh, other good news. Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny is awake, talking, and he even posted a picture of himself on Instagram with his family from his hospital bed in Germany, where he's recuperating after being poisoned with a nerve agent. His sense of humor is intact. He joked about being able to breathe on his own and then said he's actually going to go back to Russia. See, he's a patriot. Alexei Navalny, please stay safe. Oh, and in case you were wondering, there's a new major global survey out from Pew Research, and it finds that, I know this will surprise you, the image of the United States around the world has plummeted in the wake of its coronavirus response. And then among six world leaders included in the survey, Trump rated last behind all of them. In order, they were Angela Merkel of Germany, Emmanuel Macron of France, Boris Johnson of the UK, Vladimir Putin of Russia, and China's Xi Jinping. Donald Trump, as usual, bringing up the rear. And isn't that exactly where he belongs? I'd say so.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
All rise for Gaius Publius.
That's not his real name.
You call Gaius Publius into question?
Sure.
Very well. For the audience at home.
What is the real name of Gaius Publius?
Lonnie Anderson?
No, I'm sorry. You're wrong.
What is it? I got it. No, I can't take it anymore.
All right, I'll tell you. Calm down. His real name is Thomas Neuberger.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's it?
That's it. Thomas Neuberger.
Oh.
And now here's Thomas Neuberger on the Nicole Sandler Show.
The writer, formerly known as Gaius Publius, Thomas Neuberger, joins us. Hello, Tom.
Me again? Even though I'm disappointed.
What? No, we're not disappointed. Good to see you. Because now that everyone's, you know, has been stuck at home, a lot of people have begun doing the Zoom thing, so we're able to bring video into our gathering here, and so we actually not only hear but see Thomas Neuberger. How you doing, Tom?
I'm fine. You get to see 200 of my 800 square feet.
There you go. Now you're in Portland, right? You live in Portland.
I'm in Portland. I'm in a loft apartment, condo really, in downtown Portland, Oregon. And as I look out the window, it looks like a hazy day with a lot of mist in it, except that today the mist is particulate.
And
it's been particulate for the last easily 7 days.
Wow.
It's not really safe to walk outside.
So even if you were not going to wear a mask, if you were to venture outside for COVID reasons, you'll wear one for air reasons to keep the ash out of your lungs, I would guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I haven't gone out really yet. But if I had to go out for more than just a couple minutes, like to walk to the car or something, I'd probably put on two masks.
Wow.
One real solid double mask and then a second one over that just to be safe. We'll be through this in a couple of days. There should be thunderstorms tomorrow, we hope.
You hope.
But,
that's the
yeah, outcome. We're experiencing a secondary effect of climate change as we speak.
And you write a lot about climate change. You hear Trump again blaming this on the forests and they're not raking the forests enough. He's nuts. Where does he get this crap?
Trump is kind of brainless, you know. It's like a rake and leaves, right? You know how you rake leaves and then you pick up the rake and there's always a couple of leaves stuck to the rake? That's Trump's brain. You know, it's whatever leaves stuck to the rake after he was finished, you know, watching Fox or whatever. A few things stuck in his brain, you know, stuck to the tines of his rake. And those are the things he looks at. He says, oh, that must be true. Oh, that must be true. And those are the things that are true for him.
Right. And he's still doing it.
We talked earlier about whether there would be a dictatorship a la Trump. I don't think he's got a bird brain. I don't think he's got a brain to be a dictator. And really certainly doesn't have the focus or the interest in being one. So but that's a separate subject.
That is a separate subject.
That's how these things came into his head.
I'm sorry, that's how what?
That's how these things come into his head. They just, you know, it's the spaghetti that stuck to the wall from the night before.
Right. And he gets an idea. Somebody, like the whole thing last night, I don't know if you watched any of it, this town hall on ABC. George Stephanopoulos asked him about, you know, Trump said, you know, a lot of people don't like masks and they just don't want to wear them. And so Stephanopoulos said, well, like who are you hearing from? Waiters come over. And he went into this whole thing about waiters and they touch the mask and they touch your plate. And it was like, where does this come from? You can tell he is not prepping for the debates. This is his prep. He says that, you know, his regular work. It's embarrassing. As an American, it's embarrassing.
Yeah, but you know, it kind of rips, to coin a phrase, rips the mask off the American project in the 21st century, the 20th and late 20th and 21st century. I mean, all Trump did is make it look as stupid and as venal as it is. I'm listening through very carefully to a nice interview with Chris Hedges by one of your colleagues, Giuliana Furlano at ACT TV. Mm-hmm. It's from April. People should look it up. It's an excellent, tight, lots of meaty stuff in an interview. It's not the usual sound bites because people want Chris Hedges to give sound bites. And he talks about people like Trump living in Richistan. They don't live in America. They live globally and they live in Richistan. Huh. Well, who do people in Richistan see? They see waiters. They see busboys. They see maids in hotels. They see servants. And they see other people like themselves getting on private jets. Uh-huh. So that's where it gets his waiter idea. You know, he sees waiters.
Yeah, I guess. It's all just, it's disconcerting listening to him. It's just, right? I mean, it's like, where does he get these ideas from? And he gets them in his mind. And then we know, because he told us the other day of the 8 hours of Fox Not News that he watched the previous day. And then he tells us he's not going to read Bob Woodward's book because he doesn't have time. No, he's too busy watching the propaganda on Fox.
Did I mention he's lazy?
He is lazy. Ay, ay, ay. So Gaius Publius, now known as Thomas Neuberger by his real name, still writes over at downwithtyranny.com along with other places. And your latest piece, Tom, over at Down with Tyranny on Monday is titled Trump's Eviction Moratorium Opens the Door for Medicare for All by executive order. That's an interesting take on this. Let's first talk about this moratorium, eviction moratorium, because it sounds on the surface, eviction moratorium, that's going to help a lot of people. But not really. It might give them like a little bit of a cushion to stay where they are, but they're building up debt because it doesn't erase the money that they owe. It's just sort of delays it. And for the landlords who are renting out these properties, they get no relief. So it seems like a lot of people are going to be hurt by this policy. Before we get to the Medicare for All, because I'm interested in that part, let's first talk about the eviction moratorium. What does it do?
Well, as I said in the piece,
and we seem to be frozen. It's, you know, say again.
Am I moving?
You're back now. Yes, you're back now.
Excellent. What does it do? It kicks the can down the road.
Yeah.
It gives the illusion of relief by making people not have to pay bills that they would have to pay now, but forcing them into situations where they will absolutely have to pay them later, including interest, any interest charge, any penalties that are accrued.
All right, I'm gonna date myself here and see. You know, I guess only people around our age will get this, but I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a cheeseburger today.
Yeah, that's Mr. Wimpy. My favorite, Wimpy reference is actually the great movie Bedazzled, where Peter Cook and Dudley Moore works at Wimpy Burgers in London. But at any rate. Yeah, that's exactly it. And it parallels his so-called COVID relief where people don't have to pay payroll taxes. I don't know if that went through or not, but that was the proposal.
It seems like none of the businesses are not taking it up on him up on it. Nobody is, because they know it does. It's there's no relief at all. Number one, it cuts off the funding for Medicare and Social Security. And number two, it's just money you're going to have to pay back with interest later. It doesn't do anything for anyone.
It's all due later. It's all of it due later. So that's the first problem. But on the other hand, it's more relief than either the Democrats or the Republicans in Congress are offering by
yes,
a lot.
That's true.
So point number two, oh, by the way, it hurts small landlords. Mm-hmm. Now, small landlords, people that own one or two apartment buildings, not buildings, one or two, a building with one or two apartments in it, right? Those kinds of landlords are a little over half, as near as I can figure, of the market. But the lobbyists for the other half, the billionaires and the hedge funds who own the other half of the housing market, are talking about, oh, the small landlords will be hurt like crazy. Well, the fact is they will be hurt like crazy. Uh-huh. But the big landlord, you know, heck with them, right? I mean, a lot of people are upset with their big landlords anyway. So that's the first thing. It kicks the can down the road and it hurts people ultimately. It hurts the landlords now. It hurts the renters later. The second thing is it's entirely political. I mean, he's not doing all of a problem because there are other solutions available. This is just to make sure that people think, if they're not thinking too carefully, because he thinks they're as dumb as he is. Mm-hmm. He doesn't recognize smart people. He just recognizes how smart people talk, like the language they use.
Right. Because he knows the best words.
He knows the best words, and he knows people who know the best words.
And he hires the best people, like Michael Caputo. You know, sorry. We seem to be frozen again.
Trump
there.
Is...
go ahead. We're back.
Let me do make one change here, Nicole. And I'm going to see if I can bring down one thing that might be causing a problem. And we'll just exit that.
It's technology. I'm technologically cursed. I must have done something in a previous life to a tech god, because if something could go wrong, it usually does with me. So I just come to expect
technological blessings are a curse these days. At any rate, so Trump is doing this just politically. He's not doing this practically.
Right.
There is a better solution, and we could go talking about that if we wanted to. The better solution is to forgive debt to landlords,
yeah,
and then forgive the landlord's debt as well. But debt forgiveness is off the table in our every creditor must be made whole to 100% of what he's owed society. That was an Obama doctrine, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And finally, the best real fix for this would be what people are talking about weeks ago, months ago. Just pick up all of the payroll in the country.
Yeah.
Pick up all employers' payroll. Let companies, big and small, or maybe cut off the big ones, but let companies meet a point where if you're going to lay people off, send us the payroll. Mm. And companies will send in the payroll and the government will pay it. And the payroll per week is some couple of billion a month or a couple of billion a week. I don't know what the number is, but it doesn't get into debt forgiveness. It pretty well universalizes the problem and it bails out everybody. It's the exact parallel to what Obama should have done by bailing out the people with mortgages.
Please.
So they could bail out the banks via the mortgages.
Hello. This is what I've been screaming for years, right? Because if the money had gone to the mortgage holders, with the premise that this money is only to be used to pay down your mortgage, it would have gotten to the banks, but it would have funneled through Americans who needed the help more than the banks did, and we all would have been helped out by it. Instead, just the banks got bailed out, and the rest of us we went to foreclosure hell.
Yeah, and you wouldn't even need to put restrictions on it because people who desperately need that money, people who are losing their jobs, are going to pay their rent mm-hmm. because now landlords can kick them on their butts onto the street.
Right, yeah.
You don't need an eviction moratorium. People can pay their rent. So the usual rules apply. It's the
gotcha.
Perfect solution,
okay.
But it's a Sanders solution. It's a socialist solution, and neither party wants it.
Yeah. Ooh, they don't want any socialism. God forbid they do something to help the people. All right. So Thomas Neuberger, you write this this piece about Trump's eviction moratorium. So that's how it works, ostensibly, where, you know, it doesn't help the landlords. It helps the renters temporarily in that you can stay where you are. You're not going to be evicted. But when this is all said and done, you're going to owe all that money to your landlords. So you're just building up a big tab. But you're talking about the mechanism by which he did this order, his eviction moratorium, that could open the door for Medicare for All by executive order. How would that work?
Well, this is not a take and it's not a theory. It does open the door.
Okay.
It's just a matter of, will anybody walk through it? Unless the eviction order is overturned in court because the government doesn't have the authority to declare under whatever chapter it is, it's quoted in the article. It's Title 42, which is the health of the nation.
Okay.
And there's a chapter in there, a section. That allows them to declare an emergency for a pandemic. Unless that is overturned, the government now has a declared emergency on its hands. Under that authority, it didn't come through the housing department. It didn't come through Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
They ended around it and took it through HHS, Health and Human Services, which means that the Surgeon General is in charge. And the Surgeon General makes that declaration. The Secretary of Housing and Human Services affirms it.
Mm-hmm.
The government signs it. And now Trump has executive authority in an emergency. That same executive authority in another section of the same title, Title 42, the government in an emergency can declare pilot programs. Just declare them. As these will fix everybody who's affected by the pandemic, which in this country is everybody, because
right.
we're all at risk. If we don't have it, we're at risk for having it.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be true if it was smallpox or polio or anything else.
Right.
Anthrax, it was spreading wildly. He could declare, using that national emergency, he could say, okay, my pilot program is Medicare for All. Now, it wouldn't be Medicare for All as Sanders understands it. Medicare for All, as Sanders understands it, is sweetened. It's got all of the fixes in it that the current Medicare doesn't have. It doesn't have the donut hole. It covers dental. It covers vision. It covers nursing homes,
right.
those sorts of things. But it would be current Medicare, and the age of eligibility would be at birth.
Yeah, nice.
Birth.
Yeah.
Now, the beauty of this, and I don't think it's going to happen, but if it ever occurred to his little bird brain that this is how he could win re-election instantly, if he delivered, now he's already to the left of Biden on the eviction notification. If he goes to the left of Biden on Medicare for All and reverses everything he said, including at the town hall, by the way.
Yeah.
He would instantly be the Medicare for All president. And we know that Medicare for All is humongously popular on both sides of the aisle and among independents at the voter level. He would be a threat to win by a margin greater than maybe the margin that Obama beat Romney by in 2012. That would be a very interesting development. First, it would give Medicare for All to everybody, something that we've been wanting since Truman.
Yeah.
So would we put up with 4 years of Trump to get Medicare for All? I think a lot of people might make that trade. Second, it would force Biden's hand, because Biden could make that deal too. So all of a sudden, does Biden want to be the Medicare for All president? Because he's got an ace in his hand that Trump doesn't have. He's got the I'm not Trump ace.
Right. That's true.
The card is playing right now. But he could also play the Medicare for All ace if Trump plays the Medicare for All ace. And Biden would be legitimately the hero of his generation.
He would be. And Biden should embrace it. I mean, he's just so damn wishy-washy. And is so afraid to offend the Republicans who might, you know, dare to vote Democratic this year. Last night at that town hall. See, the thing is, I don't think Trump would ever do that. Because he doesn't care about people, and he certainly wouldn't take an idea that, you know, it could conceivably be, you know, drawn back to the Democrats, to liberals, to socialists. Here he was asked by somebody about, you know, pre-existing condition, and he's still pushing this bullshit line that he's got a plan to, you know, to cover people's pre-existing conditions. And by the way, Joe Biden doesn't. And so this happened last night.
What we're doing is we're going to be doing a health care plan, pre-existing, protecting people with pre-existing conditions. As an example, yourself, it sounds like that's exactly perfect. That's exactly what we're talking about. We're going to be doing a health care plan very strongly and protect people with pre-existing conditions. I will say this. They will not do that because they have socialized.
I have to stop you there.
They have socialized.
I just have to stop you there.
Finally,
just on a couple of points. Number one, Joe Biden has ran against Medicare for All in the primaries. But much more importantly, Obamacare guaranteed people with pre-existing conditions could buy insurance, guaranteed they could buy it at the same price as everyone else, guaranteed a package of essential benefits, guaranteed that insurance companies couldn't put a lifetime limit on those benefits. You fought to repeal Obamacare. You are arguing.
Well, I essentially did.
You're arguing in the Supreme Court right now to strike it down. That would do away with pre-existing conditions.
So you've that we promised, can do new health care.
But you've been promising a new health care plan. I interviewed you in June of last year. You said the health care plan would come in 2 weeks.
Yep.
You told Chris Wallace this summer
two
would come
weeks.
In 3 weeks.
Yep.
You promised an executive order on pre-existing.
I have it already.
But you've been trying to strike down pre-existing conditions.
I have it already, and it's a much better plan for you, and it's a much better plan. And
what is
you
it?
Say Obamacare, I got rid of the individual mandate, which is the worst part of Obamacare.
You're striking down the whole law.
Oh my God. And so he keeps insisting, I have a plan. It's ready to go. It's better. But he won't share it. It reminds me of, remember when John McCain said, I know how to catch Osama bin Laden. I'll do it as soon as I take, but you won't share it with our military? I mean, come on. It's just astounding.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on, man. So you're
right that it's likely he won't. He's, you know, but just to veer off into a slightly sideways point here.
Okay.
I kind of don't think he cares whether he wins or not.
Oh.
I think he enjoys the fight. I think he was prepared to lose. I've read lots of places he was just happy to lose. He had his plans in 2016, right? Yeah. What is Obama? What does Trump really want? He wants to get laid. He wants to eat good food. He wants to walk.
Well, he wants to eat shitty food, but okay. Yeah, no, he wants people to love him. He wants people to bow down at his feet. He wants people to stand when he enters the room. He wants to be treated like Kim Jong-un because he wants to be a dictator. Yeah. And so Tom Neuberger is with us, the writer formerly known as Gaius Publius. And we spoke earlier off the air, and we were talking about the other story that's out there. We dealt with it on Friday when Sasha Abramski was here from The Nation, and we talked about this scenario that was gamed out, four different scenarios gamed out by this new group called the Transition Integrity Project, where they were talking about what's going to happen around the election. And there are some people who are, like Michael Caputo, calling for everyone to go out into the streets with their guns and weapons blazing. There are others who say, and this group says, unless Joe Biden wins by such a commanding landslide victory that we know it on election night, things are going to get ugly around the election and in the weeks following, while we're, I guess, waiting for mail-in ballots to be counted and legal challenges to be played out. You don't think it's going to get like that? You disagree?
No. Well, I think that there might be some violence, but I think the state's reaction to violence is going to be pretty predictable. Again, I'll reference, I got some of this idea from Chris Hedges in that interview with Juliana Furlano. So let's start with a couple of premises. The United States is ruled by a very small core group of, you can call them what you want. Hedges calls them the oligarchs, the elites. Mm-hmm. It's our ruling class. But it's a small number of people, probably less than 1,000 or 2,000 people at the top, who really have a say in the big room when people decide what to do. They want the American hegemonic project to continue. They wanted Hillary Clinton to win. Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton was their candidate. Trump got in, and whether you go it or not, elements of the hegemonic coalition worked almost instantly to hem him in, take him down, and convert him to their cause. Hmm. He came in, for example, as somebody who was for peace and anti-NATO, and they turned him very quickly into a pro-NATO guy, you know, who? Once he got into office.
Trump?
Trump, yeah.
Trump is not pro-NATO.
Only by his words. He's only anti-NATO by his words. He's doing an awful lot to ship, to bring people into NATO and to ship arms to places like Poland and NATO countries.
But also ship arms to countries that are not NATO. And the thing is, he's antagonistic to the leaders of our NATO allied countries, but he kisses up to dictators and authoritarians like Erdogan and Putin and Duterte. And yeah. I mean, I could go on and on and on. He makes nice to those people and he shits on our allies. I don't see him playing nice with the NATO allies at all.
Well, if he were a focused Sanders-like, I mean, he ran on a Sanders platform. If I were a voter who was choosing between Sanders and Trump, if Sanders were the Democratic nominee, and I liked the overlap of what both of them said, I would be enormously disappointed right now in Trump. He sucks up to Erdogan. He makes bad moves. And that's why the elites want him out. They want somebody who's reliable, who can run the American hegemonic project properly. Obama ran it properly. He only ran and a problem when he wanted peace with Iran. But that's the only place he put his foot on the ground. He stuck his heel in the ground and said, no, let's not do that. Uh-huh. But he went along with everything else. He went along with the drone kill program, and happily. So they want Biden in. This whole group, the press, everybody who runs the country really wants Biden in. So let's take a scenario where Trump wins narrowly and the right puts up a fuss and the Republicans take it all the way to the courts. Mm-hmm. So far, so good.
Right.
Will it be decided in the courts? I say yes. Even if the right wing goes to the street, I think that the military state will put down right wing protest. If it looks like the right wing protest actually will be effective in putting Trump in office, because they don't want Trump in office either. On Biden in office.
Well, the military, you're talking about the military doesn't want Trump in office. But what about local police forces? Because they scare me.
They will do what the military tells them because they suck dollars from military budgets and they suck equipment from military budgets. They will do what they're told.
Gotcha.
If Biden goes in, Biden's a pretty right-wing militaristic guy himself, domestically. Yes. He's still not for marijuana reform, for example.
No.
Marijuana legalization.
Nope.
And he still would put marijuana people in jail if he could get away with it. He's not confused. He's just hiding his real feelings. So let's say Biden wins narrowly and the right wing rises up and they put up a fuss. So far, so good. It goes to the courts. If it looks like it will go to the streets to be decided against Biden, that won't be permitted. It will be decided in the courts. And if either candidate wins broadly, you know, the refs can't steal a game that's 40-0.
Right. Well, that's the thing. And that's why I've sort of come around. I was of the mind that if you're in a reliably blue state, if you're in New York or California or Washington state, and you feel like you can't in all good conscience vote for Joe Biden, don't. Then vote down ticket Democrats. You know, make sure the Democrats take back the Senate and hold on to the House. I get it. Now, I've modified my opinion, and I think that we need everybody to vote for Biden against Donald Trump, because it's got to be overwhelming. There can be no question, even though, you know, millions of mail-in ballots still have to be counted. I want it to be so apparent on the night of November 3rd that Donald Trump has gotten a drubbing, that Donald Trump is run out of Washington, D.C. on a rail, that there's no possible scenario for him to win, period, no matter what the mail-in votes say. I think that's the kind of victory we need against Trump to get him the hell out of there.
I'm less there than you are, Nicole, simply because I think, let's call it awkward phrase, the oligarchic state is Biden's ace in the hole.
Uh-huh.
Trump will have to win by a landslide to end up as president in March. He just won't be president in February and March if he doesn't win by landslide.
Uh-huh.
If he wins narrowly, and if it's it's iffy, the state's going to lean, going to put its shoulder to the wheel. It's going to put its thumb on the scales for Biden.
Are you sure about that? Because, I mean, look at what happened in 2000. It was pretty clear. Al Gore won the popular vote, we now know in retrospect. Florida had called it for Gore, and then somebody made a phone call to Jeb, who happened to be the governor of Florida at the time, and W's brother, who pulled some strings, and all of a sudden the networks took back their call and all of a sudden called it for Bush. And then it goes to the Supreme Court. I spent the end of November and most of December of 2000 in Kazakhstan. It was when I was adopting my daughter, and the only English language news programming they had was Fox, go figure. So I was there for the entire battle back and forth, and I flew back on December 13th, the day that Al Gore finally conceded, which, you know, he probably shouldn't have. I fear the same sort of scenario, because Donald Trump has control of the federal government, and he's got all his minions in places of power.
Well, it's going to be a fight. But let me ask you, I know we're running close to the top of the hour.
Yeah, we are.
But let me just ask you one question to ponder.
Okay.
Who do you think the oligarchy's candidate was in 2000?
Hillary Clinton.
2000.
Oh, 2000. Probably George W. Bush.
You got it. And the oligarchy, you could see it on the surface with all of the stories he invented the internet.
Yes.
And then all of that, I mean, you couldn't watch a football game during that campaign.
Yep.
Without some right wing announcing a joke about I invented the internet.
Yep.
You could tell. It was obvious. The New York Times assigned its worst order to the Gore campaign.
Yeah.
You knew who the candidate, who the oligarchy's candidate
was. Who they
was.
Wanted. Right.
So.
And this time,
the extra thing on this.
And you're saying this time they don't want Trump anymore because he's shown himself to be erratic and a nut job and not in control and a loose cannon who you certainly don't want to have the nuclear codes. Am I assuming too much here?
They really don't want him in power anymore.
Okay. Well, for once, I agree with the oligarchy.
I'm not going to buy my farmhouse in France yet.
No. Well, no. Considering you can't even get into France, your passport is kind of worthless right now. We're trapped here. Unless you want to go to the Maldives, which is sinking, or, like Serbia, or there's a handful of nations that will still accept Americans, but there's really nowhere you want to go buy a house.
To Marcy Wheeler lately. She's in Ireland.
I know.
Ireland will take us.
She was on the show just 2 days ago on Monday. And yes, I hope. I told her, I said, when you figure out where you're going to live, make sure you've got some guest rooms, because, you know, we're all going to be barging in on you at some point.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, the music is playing, and that means we're coming to the end of the hour. Thomas Neuberger is his real name. You've known him for years as Gaius Publius. It's still his Twitter handle with a hyphen in the middle. And you can find him blogging at downwithtyranny.com and a number of other places. Tom, it's great to talk to you. Thank you for joining us today.
It's absolutely my pleasure, Nicole. Thank you.
All right. You take care. Stay safe there. Stay out of the way of the fire. And we'll talk soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And with that, we are done. Another day. We made it through. I guess everyone is a miracle. We'll do it again tomorrow. Howie Klein will be here. See you then. Bye, everyone.